Hey everybody, welcome to this episode of Dracaena Wines Podcast. Today I'm sitting down with Nick Barub, who discusses what it is like to be a brand manager for a winery, actually two wineries. Now I actually met Nick because he is also from Fresno. He grew up there, but has since moved on to bigger and better things. Nick is the marketing and branding manager at Duck Pond Cellars and Desert Wind Winery, Fry's Family Wines. We are live. Hey, Nick, how are you doing?
I'm doing really well, Lori. How are you?
I am good. I am good. Where are you coming from? They are rocking back there. That's awesome.
I am coming from Temecula, California, at actually Robert Renzoni Vineyards.
Robert Renzoni Vineyards. All right. And what do they produce? A whole bunch of stuff? What are they known for?
A whole bunch of stuff. A lot of the big reds. What I'm sipping actually right now is a 2013 Old Vine Zinfandel from the Rancho Cucamonga area. But let me tell you this. How many Old Vine Zinfandels do you know that are 13.9% alcohol? It's far from jam. Yeah, exactly. It's so far from jammy. It has such nice, like, bright acidity. This is the kind of Zinfandel that I prefer to drink.
Wow. Wow. Do you know how old the vines are? Since, you know, that's not really regulated by any way.
Right. I think that area of Rancho Cucamonga, the vines are roughly 30 to 40 years old.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Go ahead.
Go ahead. Finish yours.
Oh, I was just going to say that they sit on a slope, southern-facing slope against the mountains of Rancho Cucamonga, and so it's almost high desert, so really great diurnal shifts. So ripens the grapes, but then, you know, they don't get too jammy, too ripe.
Right. I just was reading from the Lodi Chronicles or whatever that they're trying to designate within themselves. They're giving different names to different aged Zinfandels. So they're going with old vine, and then there's like heritage vine, and I'm messing it up, but there's like four different levels, century vines and things like that. And,
that's great.
Yeah. Lodi has really, come a very, very long way, and they are self-regulating in so many ways. It's really amazing.
Well, and that's good. I think that's what a lot of these ABAs actually need to start doing. You know, in the wine industry, we throw around terms so very loosely, whether it's, you know, a reserve or old vine. Again, what does it really mean? And so for the Lodi ABA to actually make rules within their own organization, I think that step forward.
Right. I agree. I say this so many times, but one of the favorite stories I have is we were actually, it was in Napa, and Henry Dutch, before it was Henry Dutch, it was this man, I don't even know what he was, but we had pulled in, and we were tasting his wine, and we tasted, and we're like, oh, well, this is, you know, it's pretty tight right now, and he took my glass, and he took his hand and he put his hand over my glass and went like this and goes, here, I just aged it 5 years for you. And first what went through my mind was, where was that hand? You know? And I'm like, oh, there's enough alcohol. No big deal.
Exactly.
And then we tasted it and, you know, there was a little difference. And then he told us the story of how old vine, you know, doesn't mean anything. He goes, I can call this old vine because I planted it 2 days before I planted this vine. And it has stuck with me from that day. And that was, I think, you know, Mike and I were, this Saturday was our 22nd anniversary.
And congratulations.
Thank you. And that was, I think, our first or second year we were married. That's how long ago the story was.
Wow.
And it had, I just cracked me up. I love that whole that whole thing. But I am drinking. It is October, so I thought I would celebrate Merlot Me Month.
Very nice.
I am drinking Myriad as well. Small Lot Merlot.
Small lot. Now, what does that mean?
Boy? Yeah, right. Right. There's another, you know, I sense a blog post coming out of what.
Right. Exactly.
You know? Small Lot Merlot. And it's a 2014 and it's very nice. Lovely, but I'm getting my muscular workout pouring this bottle because.
It's one of those glasses.
Oh yeah. Whoa. It is a big time heavy glass. But it is, you know, a very pretty one.
I hate those heavy glass because, like, once I'm done with the bottle, I get so excited thinking there's still something in it. And then there's nothing.
There is nothing.
Such a disappointment.
I know. You're like, woohoo, there's more. Oh, no. No, there's not. I agree.
Just the glass.
Yes. Yes. And plus, you know, I mean, I get it, you know, but it costs so much more to ship that stuff, too, you know?
Exactly.
But, you know, it is, you know, the concept, the view,
nice.
It does. And it actually is a very beautiful bottle. You know, I tell people all the time, once you get into the wine industry, you never look at glass the same way anymore, you know?
Never.
I'm looking at the shoulders and, ooh, you know, and how it's tapered.
Right.
And then it is a tapered.
Absolutely.
It's a tapered bottle, so I'm thinking, oh, that might be a little tough to do on a labeling line because tapered bottles don't.
Tapered bottles are the worst for a labeler.
Yeah, so it's like you just can't look at something and just appreciate it anymore. You have to analyze everything.
Exactly. When I talk about glass with my winemaker, like, all right, are we going flint for this? Is it antique green? Like, there's so many colors that you just never think of.
Right. It's just the people enjoy what they get in the bottle. They don't always understand
exactly.
what it takes to get there, you know. But that's
a process.
Right. Yes. So I am so thrilled to see you again, and I am so excited to be able to see you in a month. An exact month, right? Yes.
That's
I'm so
right.
excited.
Wow.
And I am wearing my Pijou hat tonight in honor of them because my thoughts and prayers are going out to them. It's horrible what's happening there.
It's awful.
It's so many wineries have been lost already and people's homes have been lost. You know, I'm reading the Twitter feed and people are just saying, well, we're safe, but we lost our house or, you know, this winery is gone. And it's so sad. And
it's heartbreaking.
Yeah. And typical New York, all they're not talking about anything here. I can't, you know, it's not even mentioned on the news here in New York. It's like,
oh, wow.
Yeah. It's horrible. So
it's the biggest news story here on the West Coast.
I'm sure. And, you know, I got to meet my friend Heather, HM Giving Soul. I spent the Saturday night over there in New York. She was here and I visited her and she's in Canada again and she's got it on the news and I can't get it on the news here in New York.
Wow.
But so I am wearing the hat in honor of them and I am sending out all my thoughts and prayers. Please stay safe, everybody. And I
Absolutely.
Hope that they contain this quickly. But, I don't know. It's crazy. But on to
it's
some.
It's awful. And,
go ahead.
But you know what? Wine people were resilient people. Napa had massive earthquake.
Yes.
Did a lot of damage. And this has done damage. But you know what? People will rebuild. And, you know, the spirit of those that work in wine, that passion, people coming together, it's going to show.
Yes. Yes, it will. Yes, it will. I agree. I agree. But let's move on to happier things.
All right.
And let's get to talking about your passion and pursuing your passion. So I have to start off with you're from Fresno. And
Fresno, yes.
And so I and uh we're there. Well, Mike is there. I'm in New York right now, but Mike is there. So how, actually, I got to go back to one other thing because this cracked me up.
Okay.
I don't know the, I think he's the, and if I'm saying it wrong, don't get angry at me, people. The fat Jew on Instagram. Do you know of him? He actually makes a rosé now. He makes a rosé now, which I'm sure, you know, I'm sure it's just whatever. But he makes a rosé, and he is apparently a big-time Instagram person. And my friend sent me a little Instagram video that he had, and he's sitting there in a spa with Madonna. And they're talking about, she's talking about how she stays young by putting rose petal water on her face, you know, rose water on his face. And he's got a bottle of his rosé and he's spraying it on his face. And then they talk about bad judgments and bad decisions. And the reason why my friend sent it to me was because Madonna says, oh, I make a lot of bad decisions and somehow I always end up in Fresno.
I'm sure that's probably what my dad thinks too. But, you know, he married a girl from there, so there you know, go. Without that, I wouldn't be here.
That is true. That
thanks,
is true.
Thanks, Dad, for that bad decision.
Woohoo, Dad! I have to say, you know, it's really not. I think it does get a bad rap. I don't think it's so bad. I actually really, you know, I enjoy where we live. The weather this summer was horrendous. You know, it was 3 days under 100. But, I mean, I like the area. It's a very nice area. But tell me, what was it like growing up in Fresno? Did you want to, like, grow up and go, my goal is to get the heck out of this town? Or were you happy there? Like,
so... Oh, that's a lot of questions, but we'll go in order here. So what was it like? Well, I'm number 5 of 6 kids raised on a farm in the western side of Fresno.
Oh, okay.
So wasn't really raised in the city. And when you're raised with 6 kids on a farm, you're never bored. There's always something to do. Always somebody to, well, pick on you, in my case. So that was good. No, you know what? Fresno is an incredible place, but around high school, that's when I saw myself getting out. Yeah. And doesn't matter, every time I go back, like, I want to stay at least a month and then probably leave again, but it's always home, and right. It will always be home.
Right. I like it there. I do think it gets a bad rap.
It does get a bad rap, but, you know... We have food, we have culture, we have wineries now, you know, commerce is coming into town. You know, I'm a little, it's kind of a two-edged sword because some of that farmland that, you know, I'm used to is going and selling housing tracts and so forth. But you know what? It means that Fresno is growing, Fresno's prospering, and that's what, you know, really counts.
Right. And the Fresno Grizzlies. I love going to see the Fresno Grizzlies.
Oh, good.
I do.
Maybe you'll see my parents there sometime. They're always there.
Real? Oh, all right. We're going to have to make that a date. We're going to have to do
I'll have to introduce you to.
Yes, yes. I really do love going there. I think the last game we went to was it was the Mets AAA. So I was all happy.
Oh, got it.
But I didn't know, like, I was like, are people going to, you know, like here, when I go to the Dolphins to see the Jets or whatever, you know, I get things thrown at me. So I didn't know if I was going to be, you know, harassed being a Mets fan. So I did tame it down, but I think I would have been okay there. It seemed to be,
you probably would have been okay.
Yeah, pretty
probably.
Cool. Pretty cool. So going back to Fresno, raising capital of the world, right?
It was. Now Selma is the town just south of us, but
really
Fresno held Raising Capital of the World for the longest time.
Do you think that it's changed that Fresno lost that title because now we are getting into wine and we're getting into other commerce in the area? Do you know?
I think it's the urbanization of the area. It took out a lot of vines. The further you go out on the west side, you still have those. A lot of them are planted for sun-made and for raisin production. But if you go down south to Selma, there hasn't been a lot of growth, and so most of their vines are still there. So by tonnage, I'm sure they probably still produce more than we do in Fresno now.
Okay. And then just for my location thing, is that what I'm driving through when I'm heading to Paso? Do I go through there? Because I know there's vines there that look like they're not wine. They look like they're raisins.
So when you drive to Paso, you're driving on the 41 connecting to the 43. This would be south on the 99.
Oh, over in that direction. Okay.
Oh, right.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. So you went to Cal State Fullerton, right?
I did. Go Tysons.
Go. Not very far from me. I went to Whittier, but we were probably decades apart from each other.
No.
I think so.
Not that far.
what were your career goals when you went to Cal State Fullerton?
So I actually transferred to Fullerton as a theater major. So my aspiration in life was to be an actor. Growing up on a farm, you would see me at rehearsals in Wranglers and boots, rehearsing for the next play in high school. I transferred there, but they had one of the top programs in the nation at the time. They still do. It was going to be famous.
There you go. And what was your favorite role you've ever played?
Favorite role ever played. Probably a mix of Theseus and Oberon in A Midsummer Night's Dream.
Love that play. Love, love, love that play. Love it. That is awesome.
Love the play. Love all Shakespeare. So it was.
See, this is why we get along.
Dichotomy. Exactly. Culture. We have wine. We love wine. I mean, like two peas in a pod.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I do. I love all Shakespeare. Mike is like, how do you read that stuff? I will read plays over and over again. And he's like, how do you do that? And I'm like, you just, like, it's a rhythm. You get into the rhythm,
right.
That's why there's so many things out there.
That's why there's red wine and white wine, rosé. There's something for everybody.
Yep. Yep. So I'm going to ask you, and you didn't know I was going to ask you this. So as an actor, have you ever had a oops moment on stage?
A whoops moment on stage.
Yeah.
I had a big whoop. I actually had a really big whoops moment. I was in the show called Stage Door. And it was came on. I was supposed to be a film producer. I was supposed to have a script in my hand, and it was just a paper script. The play takes place in the 20s or 30s, and I didn't have that script in my hand. Two other actors are on stage. I'm like, I'll be right back. I left it in the car. Ran, tore apart the whole back area. The closest that I found was a purple, binder that had a script in it, like plastic binder, which they clearly didn't have in the 20s or 30s. And I ran back on stage. Needless to say, my favorite teacher, Kate Whipper, my theater teacher, she may have chewed my ass a little bit, but it was okay. Just, we're all allowed one oops moment.
There you
that
go.
That was mine.
There you go.
Just one.
There you go. So, living here in New York, we've got Broadway, I go see a lot of plays. And I went to go see The Lion King in previews. No, I'm sorry. Wait, wrong. That was a whole different story. I'm going to take that back. The biggest oops I had, because that was Scar messed up, but that wasn't really that big of a thing. That wasn't, he was lying and the bone he was supposed to be chewing fell off the thing and then he had to try to get it. That wasn't really that big of an oops. But the biggest oops was in Into the Woods.
Are
you
okay?
Okay, Into the Woods with Dick Cavett. So it tells you, okay? And he was the narrator in the play. And so he's on stage and he's talking. And during this scene, Jack and the Beanstalk, the giant dies, right? Or he falls off of the beanstalk and he falls. And in the play, all you see is along the side of the stage, this big giant hand comes down, right? Well, apparently Dick Cavett was not on his little X that he was supposed to be on. So the giant's, the giant hand hit him in the head and he wears a toupee. And his toupee kind of went all flappy. And I couldn't help it. But true professional, he just kind of like, woo, and just went on with his, you know, went on. So true professional. But yeah, I'll never forget that. So your you know, binder issue, not even it.
And, you know, I'd rather upset my high school drama teacher than Stephen Sondheim. I mean, if I had to kind of weigh my options, I'll go with the high school drama teacher.
There you go. So once you graduated, what was your first job?
So I actually switched majors. I think my parents, again, two-edged sword. They had to pay for two more years of college. But then they knew I wasn't going to be a starting actor. So good on me. So I went to communications. And I studied film and entertainment. So I was doing screenwriting work in development for a production company, but was also working in a health insurance company for pets.
Aww.
Yeah. And worked, was a project coordinator there, went into the marketing department, and that's where I got my start in marketing.
Wow. And then you've been in marketing ever since? Did you were like, wow, this is really a good fit for me?
Yeah, I would actually say so. You know, numbers aren't my thing. Obviously, from theater communications, I really like being persuasive. I like changing the story. And so, you know, that creative side of me was just drawn to marketing.
And, you know, it's interesting. Have you ever been tasting room? Did you at any point?
No, nobody would actually ever hire me.
I would think that the drama, the mm-hmm. wanting to be, you know, on a stage, something like that. I think that would be like fantastic in a tasting room, you know.
I think so. I think I'm quite nice too.
I agree.
My first job was in hotels, and so hospitality kind of runs through my blood.
Oh. Wow. I think you would have made it awesome. I think you would have made whatever winery. In fact, I'll tell you, when we finally get a tasting room,
yep.
You know, 10 years down the road, you can come run it. All right. Come move to Paso.
Sweet.
Come move to Paso.
I hope everybody saves that line because I'm going to hold you to that.
Hi, you're
this
on.
This is recorded. This is recorded, Lori.
It is recorded. And I'm all for it. When we get there, come on down to Paso. I'm all for it.
Perfect.
All right. So you are, your title is actually a marketing and brand manager. And correct. What exactly does that entail? What's your daily job do?
So in marketing, there's no normal day. And I'm a one-person marketing department. So the company that I work for, which is Grease Family Wines, we actually have two different wineries in the Pacific Northwest. I'm based out of the one in Oregon, which is Duck Pond Cellars. And then we have Desert Wind Winery up in Prosser, Washington. So each of those wineries has two business segments. We have our direct consumer, that would be the tasting room, wine club, if you were to purchase anything online. And then we have our wholesale side of the business, which is those core wines that you would find in the grocery store, a bottle shop somewhere. So the marketing side of that, whether it's printing collateral, and you see a shelf talker or any kind of point of sale at the grocery store, that would be me, putting together those programs, making sure that that we have all those pieces to give to our distributor, that we're presenting those to the wine buyers at those stores. And then in the tasting room, working with that direct-to-consumer team to put on events, doing flyers, doing brochures, etc. And then on the brand side, that is anything that touches the guest. So working with my winemaker on buying labels, looking at glass, looking at corks, deciding, you know, which fits the brand, working on pricing to decide, you know, pricing strategy, or, you know, are we going to increase, decrease pricing? What's actually our portfolio? And working with both winemakers to decide where that direction going with the wineries.
Wow, that's a lot of stuff.
It's a lot of stuff for, you know, me, but I love it. I love my company. I work with a great team of people, from winemaker down to, you know, all the tasting room staff. And being a family-owned company, everybody is family. And I like that feeling. I'm tired of that corporate lifestyle.
Yep, I get it. But so what do you go between the two wineries? Are you, you said you're located, you know, you're stationed basically at the one, but do you travel? Does your job entail traveling to?
Oh, absolutely. So I actually, the last 3 weeks, I've been up at Desert Wind twice, which is great. I love Desert Wind. It's a beautiful facility. We have 4 luxury suites attached to the tasting room. So even though I'm working, it's kind of like a little mini vacation. So I really can't beat that.
Can't complain.
And it's a whole different style of wine. Whereas we do big, you know, French varietals, you know, the Cabs, Merlots, at Desert Wind. Duck Pond, you know, given that it's Oregon, is very Pinot-centric. So, you know, that Pinot, Noir, Pinot Gris, Chardonnay, Gamay.
Oh, that's kind of, well, I guess that makes sense that they are going to focus in on 2 different things so that they have a broader spectrum of what they present. What's their, are they about the same size? What's their case productions?
No, Desert Wind's case production is about 10,000. And I would say 80% of that is that wholesale wine that I was speaking of. So each of the wines that are in the tasting room are roughly about 250 cases or less.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Mm-hmm. And then we have about 40 to 45,000 at Duck Pond. And again, those tasting room wines, Trevor, our new winemaker that came on in 2016, you know, we put a cap on most of those at about 250.
Uh-oh. Did I lose you, Nick? Oh, we are, oh, I think we have another lost feed. So let's see. Oh, so Nick is lost, and I'm going to hope that he comes back in a second. If not, we're going to have to do our phone in. Oh, he's back.
Oh, I'm back. I don't even know where I went.
Yeah, you're back. I don't know.
I was like, Lori, are you there?
And I'm like,
screen went dark. I was like, I don't know what I did. I'm just talking about small lot wine.
Small lot wine, and boom, gone.
Gone. Obviously, that's a bad word.
There you go. I was like, all right, well, we're just going to talk. He'll come back, and we'll see what goes on.
I'll be back.
He's back. So when you got your first, what was your first in wine industry job?
So my first job was doing marketing communication manager for Altos Las Hormigas, which is down in Mendoza, Argentina.
And
which incredible experience that I could ever have had.
I was going to say that must have been amazing, like to be able to go there. I'm not going to lie. I probably would have like, holy shit, I'm moving there, you know, whatever. But, I like adventure, so, you know, And how
it
did
was
that
an adventure.
How did that come about? Like, I wouldn't even know where to look to find a job like that.
Okay. So you want the real story?
Well, you can tell me is there a Gloria, you know, Alleluia,
really
Gloria story,
well,
and then
not
a real
really
story?
A Gloria story. I had gone through a few different wine certifications, had been, again, working in marketing for quite a few years and applying at different wineries, even to work in tasting rooms, could not find a job. No, it was the whole, well, you don't have experience, but you need experience, and so... Then on December 2nd, this is the fun part of the story, December 2nd, my now ex actually broke up with me after we decorated our Christmas tree. Aw, that's my aw moment. But on December 3rd, the job got posted online on winejobs.com. And I thought, okay, well, I'm single now. No one in California is hiring me, so why not apply for Argentina? Aim high.
Right.
And a month later, I was packing up and getting ready to move.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
So it was actually a blessing in disguise because, one, we're both friends now. And, two, had we not broken up, I wouldn't have applied. And I would probably still be working in other industries, being told no from everyone in California.
All right, so I'm going to backtrack a bit. So... you were working as marketing, but then you have several letters after your name, right? You have several certifications in wine. What made you go that path? Like, why did you decide to study wine?
So, back in 2006-ish, I actually went to a winery, and I was the kind of person who was drinking Riesling, Muscat Canale, sweet rosés, you know, none of this red stuff. And at that winery, I went on the tour and they said, okay, we're going to pair this blue cheese and this Cabernet Sauvignon. And I thought, this is my worst nightmare. But I did. I played along and it was an epiphany moment, that aha moment when... two things that I hated, or thought I hated at the time, came together and it was magic. And so from that point, I decided I wanted to at least study and explore wine.
Okay.
It wasn't until 2010, though, that I made the decision to really want to be a sommelier. And so my sister and brother-in-law actually bought me my first course book to start studying, like, officially.
That's awesome. So, you know, I think the aha moments are so cool. I mean, I love it. Anybody who knows me knows my aha moment. It's like, I'm like the stalker of the world of, you know, and it was a sad week for me last week because Donald Carano passed away and Ferrari Carano is my, you know, the it wine, the everything. You know, our friends, John and Karen, who own Gene Edwards Cellars in Napa, we were at their house and they poured a 92 Chardonnay. And I was like, damn, like, this is wine. Like, all right, I'll put the beer down for this, you know? that was my aha moment. And, I have just, you know, I've been infatuated with Ferrari Carano. My palate has changed, you know, from their Chardonnay. But I adore their Pinots and I adore, you know, I love them, you know, I call them my mothership, you know, it's like, when the Wine Bloggers Conference announced that they were going to be out there, I'm like, woo, I can go see my mother ship. Yes, she's calling me.
Awesome.
Those aha moments are good. And I don't do blue cheese either. So I'm not going to lie. I would have turned to no, thank you. I would have said no to that. I can't do that.
You know, I still don't eat really blue cheese by itself. But again, if you pair it with an iced cab, it can actually be a little bit of magic.
That I agree.
Trust me.
I agree. I trust you 100%. But remember, microbiologist here, that's a fungus in there.
That's true.
It's just not going in his mouth. No, I'm sorry. I don't do mushrooms. I can't do it.
Penicillin?
Not on purpose.
Probably not, I hope not.
Yeah. No, I can't. There's a lot of, becoming a microbiologist was probably the best thing in my life to get me to become fit, because there's so much stuff I don't eat because I know what it is. Plus, I was a microbiologist at a food company, so that, you know, right. I mean, I'm experimenting on, you know, the food that people are eating. I'm like, whoa, no, you know. So, and I won't even share some of the stories, because, you know, we had to do customer complaints and stuff. I won't even share some of the stories of what people would send back to me that I had to analyze. But yeah,
I will live in bliss.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe in Santa Rosa, when, you know, at 1 o'clock in the morning, after we've had a whole day of wine blogging,
right.
Drinking, maybe then I'll share, but yeah, we won't do that now.
Perfect. Just if I'm putting something into my mouth that you're like, no, you shouldn't, just slap it away from me.
Okay. All right. Deal. I'll do that. So you are wine marketing and brand manager for the two wineries. And it's
correct.
Just you. Like,
just me.
How do you find the time in the day? How do you do that? Like, are you Monday, Wednesday, Friday at the one winery in your brain, Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday at another?
You know, I have a great support team with, you know, our direct to consumer and our wholesale team. It's really about the communication and, you know, learning to prioritize, because when you're in marketing, you have things coming at you from all directions. I have a great team to work with, and, you know, we all support each other, and, you know, everyone's understanding that sometimes something comes before something else. So it's that and a lot of lunches at my desk.
No, I get it. Can you work from home?
I actually do sometimes a work at home Wednesday, and which is nice. I think I am more productive when I work from home. There's no, you know, there's none of those distractions. I am quite popular.
Of course.
So, you know, people want to be in my office chatting and,
of course, I get that. I totally would bug you all day long.
You would totally be in my office.
I would. I would. You know, I'll come knocking on your door in Fresno. I will.
Perfect. Well, you know what? I'm in your tasting room. You can come down and visit.
All right. Deal. Deal.
Perfect.
All right. Let's go back to these wine certifications. So you have multiple ones. What do you have?
I'm going to say that, you know, holding my advanced level WSET, so level 3, is probably the one that makes me the most proud.
Understandably.
You know, the breadth of knowledge that you have to take in and know to pass that examination has, I believe, a 50% pass rate.
Wow.
It's difficult. So to get that, really proud. You know, it's very, that whole program is really geared to everything wine. So the theory portion that you learn encompasses everything from the business of wine down to production and obviously geography. They say that winemaking is 90% cleaning. Wine certifications are 90% geography.
I'd be in trouble. I'd really be in trouble. did you just go right for level 3, or did you do 1, 2, 3?
I didn't do 1. I did do level 2.
Okay.
Level 2 ends with a 50 question multiple choice exam. I passed the distinction, which is the highest level. And then I went directly into three, and I wasn't prepared. I don't think most of the people that were in my level three class were in my level two, and the jump of what you have to know was much greater. I think the scariest part going into it was the blind tasting. That actually becomes the easiest part of it.
Oh. So you had to go somewhere for that.
I did. So I actually went through a program down in San Diego through my teacher, Lindsay Homeroy. She's actually in the process of going through the Institute of Masters of Wine to become an MW. So I could say that I learned from one of the best.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Because I know I did one of their little surveys, you know, and it's supposed to tell you what level to start off at. And it said, you know, you should just start off at level three. And that kind of scared the living daylights out of me. I'm not going to lie. I'm like, you know.
You would totally pass. You'd walk in there and you would nail it.
Nailed it. Yeah. We're yeah.
You know, it's. Exactly. I can say that when I walked out of the exam, I did not say that at all.
No.
It was more like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. But I passed, and I passed with merit, which is the second highest. Okay. I passed the blind tasting with distinction, and then the theory portion with merit. So that automatically gives me merit, but I will take it.
I think that's impressive. I do.
Thank you.
I don't have any letters after my name.
Don't need them.
You know, we did go through UC Davis, you know, the winemaking program, but I don't think that gives me any letters. But I like the idea of these programs because I think that it's good to know a big, broad spectrum, except the right. other part of me is like, you know what? I'm not leaving Paso. Like, I adore Paso. I'm never leaving Paso for me. And
right.
like, I wish there was, there actually is an AVA class out of the Wine Academy in San Francisco that teaches you uh-huh. all of the AVAs in California. And I was like, now that's something that I think would be kind of cool because that can actually help me in the winemaking of Paso,
Of course.
But I really don't, I wish there was one that specialized in a specific AVA. Because I don't ever envision getting fruit outside of Paso. I will drink Napa. I will drink Sonoma. I have no problem with that. I love
right.
it. but for me, our fruit is always going, I shouldn't say always because you never know, but I don't envision us ever expanding out our fruit outside of Paso.
Right.
You know, and I would love to learn Paso. You know, mm-hmm. you know, heart and soul of Paso. But I give you so much credit because I hear what that test is like, and I hear it's very difficult. And just to go through a blind tasting is.
But you know, it's totally worth it, and I'm hoping to go into the diploma program through the WSET. You need to complete it in 2 years at 6 units. Right now it's, you know, the cost is $8,000 roughly. So, start my own GoFundMe page for people who just love wine that want to support me.
There you go. Why? Seriously.
Right. You guys can make the Nick Berube Wine Scholarship.
I think it's a good idea. You know what? I say go for the GoFund. There's a lot worse GoFunds out there than that. You know.
That is true.
That is true. And do you? How much do you think that having gone through those classes, how does that help you in an everyday situation?
So I think where it helps me, not necessarily in my current role, but I have a life outside of my job and I love wine outside of that. So whether I'm active on Twitter or starting up my blog. I like to be as well-rounded as I can. And then ultimately my goal is to become an MW. That would be my ultimate life goal. And that opens so many doors. I think, although I love my position and I don't see myself leaving anytime, I think the best job that could ever happen would be to be a wine buyer, especially for like a big importer or distributor. But those positions are usually, I mean, they're highly coveted, and a lot of MWs actually hold them. So, you know, to be able to travel around the world, work directly with producers, trying to fill gaps in a portfolio, sounds pretty amazing.
And that the MW certification, that's beyond the diploma. That's like a whole other avenue, right?
Correct. So although it's not directly WSET, the Institute of Masters of Wine is in a way related. And so it's equivalent to having a PhD in wine, just like having an MS, so Master Sommelier, through the Court of Master program. This is the Institute of Masters of Wine. Less service oriented, so obviously the MS is more, if you're already working in the restaurant or hotel industry with wine. Again, the MW is a lot more encompassing of theory and everything wine related.
So what is that show? Uncorked, I think it is, but that's a Master Sommelier, right? That's an MS that show is all about, right?
Correct.
You said that again, focuses more on service.
Correct. So a lot of those Master Somms, they are the ones that are working at high-end resorts. That focuses on service, but that's not to negate how much that exam is. They also have theory portion, they blind tastings and so forth. But I can taste a wine and tell you, hopefully, region, age, price point, varietal, but I couldn't tell you the producer. Whereas somebody that goes through all the way through that court program would definitely be able to do that.
That blows my mind. Like, I mean, it really, that blows my mind. I mean, to be able to give a vintage within a year or whatever, or, I mean, I can do some varietals, like I can tell you a Zin left and right, a Syrah, I'm good, so I can do varieties, but I don't, no way a year. I could probably pick out a Rutherford, because that dust is so obvious everywhere. So depending on that, but that blows my mind. And I guess that's just done by a lot of tasting. You just.
Oh, absolutely. During level 3, I believe we tasted 80 to 90 different wines. During the diploma program, you taste over 260.
Wow. Mm-hmm. And are you going somewhere? Like, do you go somewhere for that? Or is that you're studying in your house and you're buying wine and they're telling you what to buy?
So for the diploma, it is a mix of, you can either do the program completely online or you can do in class, which is typically there's designated weekends that you would go for the weekend to study. The closest program for me would either be in BC or down in San Francisco. The Napa Wine Academy just started their diploma program, which is very exciting. I'm looking at that. It's a lot of self-study, but I like the idea of doing it in person, just so that I'm not trying to find wine that is nearly impossible to find in the Pacific Northwest.
Right. And then I think it's kind of tough to study like that when you're by yourself, because you know what you bought. I mean, right? I mean, it's got to be a little, you know, you're telling something because you know what you bought. So, yeah.
You know, the good thing I will say, there's a wine shop in Portland where I live that has a lot of industry people that go. It's a wine shop and wine bar. It's incredible. And we'll do blind tastings. The owners, they will just pour and be like, all right, go ahead. And that's because one of them is going to be starting a diploma. One is more service-oriented through the port. So, yeah, it's at least I would have some people who enjoy wine that would like to quiz me or have blind tastings.
It's always good to do it in a group. It's more fun.
I agree. Drinking by myself, I mean, sure, I can do it, but I'd rather have others around me.
There you go. There you go. So I just have one last question before we play our little game. You know, our tagline is pursue your passion, and you obviously are pursuing your passion, but if you could think of one thing to tell either your younger self or somebody who is just getting into the wine industry now, what would that be?
Wow. Don't listen to the naysayers. And I say that because when you tell somebody that you want to study wine or they want to work in wine, some people just kind of like poo-poo it off like that's not a real job or that's not a real certification. And they don't understand the amount of work that goes into it. The amount of time, the amount of passion that somebody actually has to, and discipline that somebody needs to either study wine or work in the wine industry. Look past those naysayers and, you know, continue following your passion and look for those people who support you in it.
That's awesome. Yep. It's very important to find the people who support you and keep yourself in their company. That is awesome.
Exactly.
That is awesome.
And this is why I keep you in my company.
Aww. Well, you know, it's really, you know.
Right back at you.
All right. So we're ready to play our game, our little game of opposites. All right. So the whole concept of this game is that you don't really think, that you just say what comes first to your mind. And for those of you who are watching, this is the first time. I totally stole this from Phoebe on Friends. It's like, I think it is the best game ever. We just converted it from non-wine stuff to wine stuff. But I'm going to get you in the groove with non-wine stuff first, all right?
Okay.
All right.
Be kind.
All right. Ready? You want a last swig of?
I'm all. All right, I'm ready.
All right, ready to go. Here we go. Ready? Okay. Night or day?
Day.
Sunset or sunrise?
Sunset.
Black or white?
Black.
Walk or run?
Walk.
I haven't had a single person say run yet. It's so
awesome. Why would you ever do a leisurely stroll?
All right.
Walking doesn't result in sweat.
Okay. Food or drink?
Drink.
Okay. Old world or new world?
Old world.
Sweet or dry?
Dry.
Bubbles or still?
Bubbles.
Oak or stainless?
Stainless.
Drink now or drink later?
Drink later.
Blend or varietal?
Varietal.
Vintage or non-vintage?
Vintage.
Cork or screw cap?
Cork.
Napa or Sonoma?
Sonoma.
Commercial or indigenous?
Indigenous.
Bordeaux or Rhone?
Rhone.
Warm climate, cool climate?
Cool climate.
All right. And of course, then Paso, right? Paso over anything else, right?
Of course.
Okay. And
of course.
What is the best varietal?
Cabernet Franc.
There you go.
And she didn't coach me on that.
Not at all. Not at all.
You know what? I am a true fan of the Loire varietals. So Cabernet Franc, Chenin Blanc. Yep.
There you go. There you go.
And that you make incredible wine. So, you know, you are the shining star of California Cabernet Franc.
Oh, that is so sweet of you. I love that.
No, it's very true.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I really do try hard to get that Cab Franc out there. Everybody, I'm trying to get the Cab Franc the 2017. I'm working on it already.
Right?
Yeah.
Selling futures of like...
Oh, no, not ours. Not ours. Like, Cab Franc Day. But I am selling ours now, but no, that's 2015. But no. Yes. So, oh my God, Cab Franc Day. Already trying to get that undergo. So
yeah
we're gonna be on radio stations this year.
Awesome.
We are. Thanks to Damian Grindley of Brecken Estate. He has arranged. We're going to be on two radio shows this year. So
that's awesome. That's great.
Cab Franc Day is expanding.
Cab Franc is a grape that needs more exploration. More people need to jump on board.
That's awesome. I'm all for being that springboard, you know.
You're fighting the good fight.
I try. So, anyways, well, thank you so very, very much for coming on.
Thank you.
And it is great.
This is great.
It is great to see you again. And I will. I guess the next time we'll be there, because you're not coming to Fresno anytime soon, right?
No, but I'll see you in a month.
1 month. Awesome, awesome. That is, I'm actually knocking on wood. I'm not, you know, I'm worried about whether they're going to be
there. Oh, that's true.
You know, I mean.
Everything will be fine. Positive thoughts, positive energy going up that way.
Yes, absolutely. Sending
lots
our positive
to
thoughts.
To Napa and Sonoma.
Absolutely. Positive thoughts to Napa and Sonoma. So I thank you again for joining Dracena Wines on Wine. It was great to see you again. And I will see you in a month. And
sounds great.
Awesome, awesome seeing you. And thanks again.
Awesome seeing you. Cheers.
Cheers. Slancha. Talk to you later, okay?
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye. Thanks for listening to Dracena Wines Podcast. If you have suggestions of what topics you would like us to discuss, please reach out to us on social media or at dracenawines@gmail.com. If you liked our podcast, please subscribe at iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or whichever podcasting program you use. To easily subscribe at iTunes, please go to bit.ly/DracenaPodcast. That's bit.ly/D for Dracena and P for podcast. We would greatly appreciate you leaving a review on your favorite system. It helps others to find us. Let's get social. Find us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, Snapchat, Pinterest, YouTube, Google+, and Periscope at Dracena Wines. And I am on LinkedIn as Lori Hoyt Budd. Check out our award-winning wine at DracenaWines.com. And remember to always pursue your passion. Slancha!